Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Welcome to New Horror Express, your fourth daily podcast, chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's episode, I'm chatting to author J.P. Willey about his debut novel, Blood in the Woods. At this point, I should issue a spoiler warning, as we do talk extensively about the plot of Blood in the Woods. Anyway, you've got fair warning now, so now you know, and now that's out the way. We also talk about how the novel was inspired by true occultist events, how the novel is both a horror story and a coming-of-age story, and what JP's writing inspirations were while writing the book. Away from that, we talk more generally about JP's favourite horrors, and also how he manages to balance his writing and filmmaking with having a family, and not only that, still being an active sergeant in the US military. We even find time to detour into some non-horror chat about some of our other shared passions, namely wrestling and metal. It's a fun-packed interview, and just before we get into it, I just want to say, to help grow the show, it would be great if you could rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Anyway, now that plug's out of the way, let's get to the interview with JP. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
That's no problem. We've got you on today primarily to talk about your first novel, Blood in the Woods. We will talk about other things, no doubt, but we'll start with that. We'll start with Blood in the Woods. It's based on a true story, or roughly based on a true story, according to the blurb. I was wondering what inspired you, like, to pick that story to be the basis for your first novel. What was, the inspiration behind it of, like, this? Yeah, I think this is going to be my book.
It was the what if. I believe that I had grown up as a kid, and when I say what if, we had some occult practices that were happening in the deep South during the time, and me and my group of friends witnessed quite a bit of it, from like cattle mutilations to like finding altars in the woods to animal intestines thrown up in trees and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was always that what if, like, what if somebody is out here? Like, who is doing this? What if it's our neighbor? What if, you know, it's someone we know? And, you know, personally experiencing those things, I decided to go ahead and write the novel, my first novel, Blood in the Woods, based off, you know, my life, my childhood friends, and just telling the story in a fictitious way, you know, for readers to, you know, get engaged in. So it was the what if of my childhood that, you know, for the things we experienced and made us question things that, you know, gave me the idea to start putting pen to paper.
Yeah, that sounds like a good reason to do that. I was wondering also, like, reading the novel, having that foreknowledge of it being based roughly on a true story, I was wondering, how closely are the characters based on, you know, the people that they're based on? It would, you know, I imagine that the character, the central character of Jody, is based on yourself. Gayla, his mum, is based on your mum, I take it. How closely, you know, where's the fictitious element, and how much of that is real, just real input of those were the characters?
It's very close to the individuals. I mean, when I wrote the novel, I wanted to, you know, tell a fictitious retelling of my childhood. So I reached out to all my childhood friends, Jack, Crystal, Justin, of course, my mother, Gayla, and my brother, Hunter. Everybody was like, you know what? Yeah. If you want to write a novel, go ahead and do it. Use our names, you know, mm-hmm. Tell your story, you know, and I was able to do that. And I think that's why the novel gets a lot of praise, because the characters feel so real and people relate to them because they were real. These were my family. This was my friends. These were my friends. And me and Jack are still best friends to this day. And it was really fun to, you know, tell some of the things that we did experience as kids and also, you know, tell some of the stories that we really did do and, you know, put it out there for the world to see and experience. And it's just been a real joy to, you know, witness that and hear, you know, all the praise that comes from it.
Yeah. So did you feel that that made it easier to write in any way? That, because they do feel like very fleshed out characters. They do feel very real characters. Was the writing process any easier because they were kind of pre-fleshed out, because they're real people. They're people that you know from your life, they're yourself in one case, obviously.
Yeah, because this was my first novel, and there's a saying out there, you write with what you know.
Yeah.
And I knew my friends and family, you know, better than anyone. So I think it was very easy to write the characters and the dialogue. And it came really easy just because I was writing what I knew. And, you know, I always recommend people who are starting off writing to, you know, just write what you know. And the characters that you experience in the novel were who I knew. And it just was very easy to write, and it wasn't hard at all.
Did you ever, like, kind of censor yourself or worry about putting certain stories about yourself out there? Because, like, you know, Jody and his friends, I mean, even though you root for them, they're not always the most likable. They don't always do the most likable things. And did you ever think, like, of self-censoring, of being like, oh, I might not put in that because it might put me in a bad light?
No, not at all. That's a great question. No one's never really asked me that before. And I'm glad you did. Me as a parent, I have 5 kids now. Like, mm-hmm. I look back on my youth growing up, like, I was a little badass. Like, I needed to be like, you know, if the character that I wrote about, you know, how I was growing up, if any of my kids would have behaved as I did and Jack, like, I would have just tore their ass up on like a daily basis. And when I wrote the novel, I was like, you know, thinking back on all the things we did. And at the time, you know, I was a parent when writing it, I was like, Jesus Christ. I was like, we were bad as shit. And I continued to write. And what I did is, when I was writing, I was like, you know what? I'm going to tell it how it was, like, sort of how we were. And when I wrote, I really wanted the readers, like you said, they don't always do these nice things. They're somewhat bullies at certain points in the novel. You know, they have good hearts, but the characters, they were flawed. You know, they were kids. And I wanted the readers to sort of detest them at certain parts, because I always knew, you know, what the story of the novel was and what the, you know, the climax was going to lead to. And when that happened, it didn't matter how much you couldn't stand the children or how much you didn't like their personalities and the things that they did, you were going to feel sorry for them and you were going to end up rooting for them. So that's a very great question. And I didn't feel like censoring anything. I wanted the readers to detest the kids on a certain level, but end up, you know, pulling for them in the end.
And I certainly think you achieved that. There, you know, I mean, there is definite points in the novel where you're like, man, these are not good kids. And then there's other points where you're like, kind of realize, oh man, they are kids, you know, and they're doing foolish things and they are kids. And there is a kind of, because the novel's written in retrospect, there is a kind of commentary as well on, like, I did this in my youth, but, you know, there's a kind of suggestion that, you know, they learned from it as well. So there's never a point where they're kind of truly detestable.
Yes, that is correct. I'm glad you see it that way. I mean, some people who've read it have been like, man, I couldn't stand those characters. I hated those kids. Like, I wish, you know, yada yada yada. But I'm glad you see it that way, because that's sort of the way I intended it.
Right. I was wondering as well what the kind of influences were on the book, because when I was reading it, I remember I watched a movie last year called The Summer of 84. I don't know if you saw that, but that kind of came to mind while reading it. And then a lot of kind of Stephen King stuff, of like that first part of It and this kind of Stand By Me stuff. Was any of that kind of deliberate? Did you have any of that in mind?
No, was that
an influence?
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you picked up the references. I didn't intend for that to happen, because I wrote Blood in the Woods and finished it, the first draft of it, in 2010. So I was looking for a publisher for a very long time. I didn't get published until 2017. So 7 years of trying to find a publisher to get this story out there. It took me, you know, to get it into publication. And a lot of people that read it, you know, they compare certain aspects of it to It. And just recently when Summer of 84 came out, my publisher gave me a ring. And his name's James Longmore. He runs the company. And he called me. He was like, "Hey, Joe," he was like, "have you seen Summer of 84 yet?" And I was like, "No." He's like, "It has a very like dark Blood in the Woods feel to it." And I was like, "You know what? Let me give it a watch." So I watched it and I absolutely loved the movie. And I could see where he was coming from of what he caught on to it. Because when you're reading Blood in the Woods, it's more of a coming of age tale than anything. And it has that real thick, like late 80s, more early 90s, like nostalgic feel to it. Most of the films that you see that are really big right now are taking place in the 80s, you know, hence Summer of 84, Stranger Things. But Blood in the Woods captures that early 90s nostalgia that no one's done yet. And I saw where he was going with it. But of course, Summer of 84 is a completely different, you know, film. It's a different story. I think people, you know, call it the Stand By Me of horror, and they refer to it, you know, they refer it to novels as well too, I think, just because of the coming of age aspect.
Absolutely.
Yeah, nothing more, because there's no, you know, scary clowns and there's no, you know, serial killers next door. It's its own story, but it is a great compliment for people to sort of connect those great pieces of work to my novel. And that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, because there is definitely different elements, and the kind of threat in those things is different to the threat in a novel. And also, like you say, the time period thing, it is more that kind of early 90s. The threat, as we should say, is a kind of devil worshipping cult. And it's interesting how you make an effort to make it clear the differences between devil worshipping and Satanism, and don't just kind of play up on the kind of satanic panic thing, you know, and make it very clear that there's people who are kind of into this who are fine, and there's people who are, you know, part of kind of crazy cults who are mental.
Yeah, when I had to do a lot of research to say when I was, you know, putting Blood in the Woods together, because I mean, the satanic panic happened. It was all across the U.S. that this was occurring. And I didn't, when I was writing the novel, you know, and even based off the things that I experienced, like the occult practices and all that growing up during that time frame, I didn't want to offend anyone. And my goal writing Blood in the Woods was not to offend anyone. It was really just to tell a story. And a lot of people like yourself catch that, you know, there's, you know, because me, I'm Christian, and most people can't believe it after like reading Blood in the Woods, something so, you know, explosively violent and disturbing and heart-wrenching is written by someone who comes from the Christian faith. But, you know, me being in the military for the last 18 years, like my life has been just engulfed in violence. So writing Blood in the Woods, I wanted to capture that level of violence that, you know, I've been accustomed to for a very long time. But also, you know, not slander, you know, anyone from any type of religion, because, you know, I love everyone. Like, I don't care who you are, like what you believe in, what you worship. If someone comes in and tries to do bodily harm to you, I'm going to defend you. And I tried to capture that in the novel, that not there's evil in the world, but just because people are associated with something that you're uncomfortable with doesn't make them bad people.
Yeah, it's good. It's good you do that. It's good that you differentiate. Actually, the kind of the scenes with the Satanist, the friendly neighborhood Satanist, are quite funny. I thought when they meet the guy who's a Satanist, but it's just that's just his belief in Taco Bell after they've been attacked in the mall by one of the cult members. I thought that was quite entertaining. And I thought it was one of those kind of funny scenes of, like, it was coincidental that they bumped into the one Satanist who could fill them in with the knowledge he needed in the Taco Bell.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that comes from like personal experience. And, you know, because believe it or not, like the incident in the mall did happen, just not to the extent that the book expands upon it with me and my friends.
You were chased by some dick.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I wanted it to be, you know, as coming from the South, from the Bible Belt, I wanted to sort of teach my own, you know, kinfolk and Bible Belt thumpers that when they're reading the book, that, you know, even though these guys are being, you know, chased or pursued by these, you know, crazy cultists that believe in Satan and do all these horrible, you know, atrocious things, I wanted it, you know, a actual real, you know, Satanist based off the, you know, satanic religion or whatever they, or anything, to be the one that really conveys the message to the boys of what's really going on and showing concern for them. And I just wanted to like, sort of like kill like the, I guess the, you know, whatever, you know, surrounds Satanists to making them all bad people and you should be terrified of them. So I just wanted to like eliminate, you know, that, that
stigma.
Yeah. The stigma surrounding it. Yeah.
I was wondering, you talked a little bit about your military experience and being in the military for a long time. Well, when did you decide that you wanted to write something, write a novel? Was that always something in your future, or was there a certain point where you were like, yeah, I want to do this?
I started writing because we lost my best friend Jack's sister Jamie. So it happened in 2006, when I got back from my second deployment, Jamie passed away, just like how you read in the novel. Mm-hmm. She got into a car accident and she passed away. And it was her death that really led to me writing Blood in the Woods. It was also during that time in 2006 when the Hosanna Church out in Ponchatoula, Louisiana, came under, you know, national headlines for the child rape and abuse that was going on in the church after hours, you know, led by the pastor who was like into satanic worship. So I took a lot of the true case, you know, that happened in that church, like the violence and the abuse towards children that really did occur in that church. And, you know, I sort of blended that into Blood in the Woods in certain scenes that readers experience. There's nothing more to me terrifying than real life. If you scroll your Twitter feed today, you'll see some of the most terrible, disturbing things that, you know, that you can possibly see. You know, it's the world's scarier than any vampire werewolf novel that you'll pick up today.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when I started writing Blood in the Woods, you know, it was really therapy for me. It was really therapeutic, you know, because I was dealing with some PTSD issues from the war. I was in a terrible marriage at the time that, like several months after I finished writing Blood in the Woods, I was, you know, I filed for divorce against my ex-wife. So when people read the novel, it's really emotionally charged. A lot of people call it an emotional roller coaster ride into like total darkness. And I think people that catch that are really catching just where I was at the time when I was writing what I knew. And so I really owe it all to Jamie of why this novel is out in publication.
I mean, yeah, that's certainly a powerful reason to get onto that. But that was not something you had in mind at all previously up until
then. No. It wasn't. I mean, me as a horror fan, I knew, you know, after Jamie died, and when I went out there, and the novel is sort of very truthful to how I came to the idea to start writing it. You know, I was on my street and I was thinking about her. And then, you know, I looked over to the woods, you know, where we used to play as kids, where I used to see guys like looking over, you know, our fences, watching us play. And we'd be outside at night and I'd hear people whispering our names from the woods at night. And I used to run and tell my mother, and it was just some very weird things that was going on out there. And I had my what if, you know, for the novel, like what if somebody was really out there when we heard those things, you know, and that was it. And Blood in the Woods was born, and it is what it is.
What you say, it's a kind of coming of age tale with a strong horror element. There is some pretty nasty scenes in the book. In particular, I think like the kind of final climax, what happens to one of the kids is, yeah, pretty damn gruesome. Were you ever worried of like pushing things too far, or was that ever in your mind of like, yeah.
No, I mean, believe it or not, that was what readers get now is very toned down, thanks to my publisher and editor. So I wanted to deliver a punch to the gut to readers because, you know, those that horrible event that you're talking about in the book, I mean, that's real. That's probably taking place right now as we speak. Somewhere on this earth, that's happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes it so visceral, so real, and why people have such a, it really unnerves them when they get to certain scenes in Blood in the Woods. And I think it's just because everything is based in reality, and everything that you read can occur, has occurred, or will occur. But I was never scared to push the boundaries. I wanted to tell a story, and I wanted to, you know, knock the wind out of your chest if I had the opportunity to.
I certainly think there's scenes in the novel that are like that, that are very intense, that work very, very well. The scene in the mall where we talked about, where the kids are being chased and they end up fighting one of the guys in the elevator. The kind of home invasion scene where one of the cultists bursts through the window with the dog head. There's certainly some very effective scenes. I think
the creek scene, yeah, I mean, so many readers have reached out to me over the creek scene. They absolutely love that scene. For some reason, the creek, out of nowhere.
I think because it comes out. Yeah, they're just suddenly running out the woods, and it's kind of quite a peaceful scene, and then it suddenly switches gears. I think that's probably why it kind of takes them by surprise. It took me by surprise too while I was reading the novel. The other scene, the final scene, I think it's upsetting as well. Because it's one of the few character, the character. I don't want to spoil it actually, but I think listeners should read the novel for themselves. I think it's a good book, and but that character doesn't feel quite as fleshed out as some of the others.
Exactly. And I wanted it that way because even writing it, I debated on making, you know, it someone else or you know, what readers are going to experience. And I don't think even me as the writer and even as a reader could have dealt with a event like that towards a main fleshed out character. I couldn't do that. I had to, you know, utilize that scene in a right way to, you know, make the readers, you know, feel whatever for those boys, even if they didn't like them or they, you know, have despised them the whole book. I needed them to root for them. And that's sort of why I sort of went with a less fleshed out character for that certain scene.
Okay. Yeah. Is that the kind of the horror that you gravitate to the most, would you say? The kind of more extreme or kind of nastier horror?
Not the whole book's
nasty. I don't want to kind of mislead listeners. You know?
No, I know exactly what you mean. Like, you know, you're talking about nasty, like just gruesome, like gore, just ultra-violent, like out of nowhere horror. Yes, I'm a big fan of that. But the current novella that I'm writing right now is more of a supernatural action horror type novella. But I do, as a viewer and writer, gravitate towards, you know, just more dark fiction. You know, there's horror elements to everything that I do. Mm-hmm. Even as a, you know, independent film director, I have two films currently filming right now. And there are horror elements but it's not, I don't focus on just a certain part of horror. But as a writer, I guess you would say, I definitely probably love like just dark fiction like more. But there is one part in Blood in the Woods that is supernatural, and no one has caught it yet. So there is a part in the novel that has a supernatural feel to it and a supernatural being in it, and no one catches it. And so, because they're, you know, I'll let readers find it out. And if you're listening and if you read it, and if you find it, shoot me a message on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and let me know when you find it. So, but it's there.
Right.
But I am a fan of like extreme horror. Like some of my favorite films are like Martyrs, a Serbian film, stuff like that. Like your typical ghost stories and stuff doesn't really, you know, bother me much or, you know, get to me, even though I do like writing them. And cause I'm filming a ghost like type film, you know, right now, sort of as we speak. But as the viewer and as a writer, I know what entertains other people, but it necessarily doesn't entertain me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense. I have to say, yeah, I mean, like the kind of extreme horror, I always have kind of mixed feelings. Like, I think Martyrs is an absolutely great film. And that's a film that I really admire and is on the extreme end of the spectrum. But then there's other films like, say, Hostel, where I think it does like things that are just kind of shocking for the sake of being shocking that I don't really respond to at all.
Exactly. I think Blood in the Woods, if it were a film or to be a film, it would definitely be an extreme horror type film. You know, the thing about the novel and why it doesn't get as much exposure as it does is because it is labeled as horror, and the only horror element to Blood in the Woods is the occult horror aspect of it. You know, you take away the cult and, you know, all that satanic imagery, you just have a coming of age story. So, I mean, it's a lot of readers sometimes don't even classify it as horror. They classify it more as a thriller or, you know, a suspense type novel when you start really, really delving into, you know, what the story is about. But to me, it is a horror story. It's an extreme like horror story. So in the likes of like Martyrs, Frontiers, you know, Hostel, and that type of, you know, if I could classify it, that's what it would be in.
I think reading it, yeah, I mean, like, obviously there is stretches of it that don't feel like a horror novel, do feel like a coming-of-age novel. But I think overall, you know, given the story and given certain scenes, I would classify it as a horror book, as a horror novel.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I did notice that I didn't notice the supernatural element. I'm not the one reader who has yet spotted that. I wish I could say I was. Oh, I did notice there is a mention of this Rouge, which is also the title of one of your short films, Welcome Home, Rougarou. Am I pronouncing that right? I got that totally wrong.
Welcome Home, Rougarou. It's Rougarou. It's so Cajun, it's almost a tongue twister.
Rougarou. Okay.
It's hard to
Rougarou.
Say.
it's a new one on me. And that is mentioned in the novel, and that's one of your short films. I take it this is some sort of folk story, urban legend from the Louisiana area.
You're correct. The Rougarou is the Louisiana werewolf. So I'm glad you caught that. You're the first person that caught that. But I will tell you when this interview ends, before we go, what supernatural part is in Blood in the Woods, and you'll snap your fingers. You'll be like, damn, okay, it was there.
It was in plain sight all along.
Plain sight. You just thought it was something else, but it was in plain sight.
So with these two short films, Welcome Home, Rougarou, now I know how to pronounce that, and Crybaby Bridge, a Louisiana urban legend. How far along are you with them? Are they getting released or screened?
We're moving along great. It's been a slow but steady process. We shoot the final night for Crybaby Bridge on February 3rd, and we wrap filming on that project in Welcome Home, Rougarou. We finished filming in March. So looking at, you know, mid-2019 to the end of 2019 that these films will be out in circulation, you know, and in independent film festivals and, you know, on the internet, you know, through Vimeo and places for, you know, the world to check out and see. It's exciting. Actually, I have a UK artist named Nathan Michael. He goes by Lost Outrider. Amazing musician, you know, composer, and he's actually doing all of the, you know, original soundtrack to Crybaby Bridge. So, like I said, I'm not like a super huge fan of like ghost stories, you know. Yeah, it doesn't get to me, but I know that, you know, horror fans love that type of stuff. So I'm going to give them something fun and something pretty shocking. So just stay tuned for that one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know. I mean, ghost stories certainly do have a big audience. Right, it's so it. That's the Crybaby Bridge and Welcome Home Rougarou, is that similar, or is that very, have a very different feel?
Very different feel, very different cast and crew. And you know, Welcome Home Rougarou, it was based off a short story that I posted on Amazon, and it reached number 5 for short reads, yeah, for a very short time. And so I wanted, you know, to make it into a film because I believed it had a lot of potential. You know, so I wrote the screenplay for it. You know, I produced it. I'm directing it. I have an amazing cast and crew, you know, from the actors to the makeup, wardrobe department. It's going to be a really good time. So if you sort of want to know what that's about, you can always just go check out, you know, the short story on Amazon, and expect that film to be out late 2019. But it's going to be really good. I'm really excited about that one. And I believe horror fans will be too, because this is like the first time the Rougarou will get like its own like moment in the spotlight, you know, or, you know, based off the Louisiana, you know, legends and myths that surround it.
Yeah. But I have to say, I'm totally ignorant of the Rougarou. I don't know if it's something that's kind of known generally in the States, or if it's just a kind of Louisiana thing.
Louisiana.
Specifically, that's just it's outside, not really known. I take it, are you still in the military currently? Because I feel like, I mean, it's a lot to juggle between the writing and the directing and being in the military.
Yeah, it is. I'm still serving. I retire in October of 2020. So it's one of the main reasons why some of my films take quite a bit of time to, you know, to get done and get out there. I don't believe in rushing to failure. So they'll be done when they're done. I want to give the cast and crew something to be proud of, and fans, you know, horror fans, something to be, you know, excited about, something to watch. And, you know, I really wanted to motivate people and other aspiring filmmakers to just get up off their asses and go make a film. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's hopefully, you know, when I retire, I could possibly do it for a living, you know, as a screenwriter and director. And that's my dream. But, you know, I'm also a realist. So I'm going to continue to drive forward in my career and then move on to another career after this, unless, you know, something blows up for me.
You mentioned, you know, giving something back to horror fans, and you know that horror fans can engage with. You've mentioned some of your kind of favorite horror films. How long have you been into horror? How did you first get into horror? Going winding way back to the how? Yeah, what was that? What was the thing that sparked your interest in horror film? Or horror fiction?
I read Bram Stoker's Dracula when I was very young. And even though I couldn't understand every sentence, there was a line in the book that gave me chills down my spine. And it said, the dead travel fast. And I was like, man, that's chilling. And I loved the way that it made me feel, you know. So as a kid, you know, I started watching, you know, Jaws. And as I got older, I was in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Halloween and all that. And so I think, you know, I've always been a horror fan for as young as I can remember. It's always been there. You know, my kids, you know, my family, we're huge horror nuts. I mean, when we sit down, you know, on the weekends late at night, we're not watching, you know, Disney films, we're watching horror. So, you know, hopefully if I'm not extremely successful, you know, in my career and, you know, writing novels and these films, then maybe I can pass something off great to my kids and they can make a difference.
Take up the reins as future horror novelists and filmmakers.
Exactly.
You mentioned as well that you've been working on your latest novella, Hot Summer Savior, I believe that's called.
Yep.
And is that Is that different again? You know, we've obviously, you're working on one ghost story film, one kind of supernatural, but not different. How different is this to Blood in the Woods? How different is this to the two films you've been working on?
Yeah, it's different. I'm really excited about Hot Summer Savior. I've been writing it for probably over a year now. You know, just going back to it from time to time, juggling, you know, work and the indie film and screenwriting and, you know, being a husband and father of five, you know, I try to balance it all. And I'm really excited about it, you know, and I hope, you know, it gets picked up fairly quickly. I hope it doesn't take like 7 years to reach publication, you know, like Blood in the Woods did, you know, because I got a lot of credibility to my name and, you know, people out there can see how I promote myself and how my work is and all the reviews that it gets. So I hope somebody picks it up pretty quick, and because I'm going to be shopping around soon for it. And because I don't want to self-publish it. I mean, that's really easy to do, but I'd rather, you know, gain some more credibility, you know, to my name as a writer. So I'm really excited about it. And I hope, you know, fans, when it does come out, I hope they love it.
Both in terms of your fiction writing and in terms of your filmmaking, do you very much just concentrate on the stories you want to tell and your own process, or do you draw from any particular inspirations, either filmmakers or other horror writers?
I march to the beat of my own drum, my friend. I just sit down, I write. I believe if you want something done right, you do it yourself. And you know, that's why I started writing my own films and directing them. Now, don't get it twisted, like a film is a team effort. Like I couldn't do what I do without, you know, my assistant director, without, you know, all the light and sound guys and gals and the makeup artists and everyone who comes out. Like I couldn't do it without him, because in the end, if I didn't have them, it would just be, you know, once again, a story on a piece of paper and I'd never bring it to life. But I sort of just roll with the punches. You know, being a leader in the Army for a very long time, there's nothing in this world or a job out there that I can't do and be successful at. So I'm just confident in everything I do. And, you know, when I don't know everything. And when I need to know something, I ask the questions and we figure it out together. So, but I like to just go out there and execute.
But, I mean, that's, yeah, I can respect that. Well, you seem to be working on a lot of things. Is there any other kind of future things that you've kind of got in your hand to do that you want to do? Any ideas for a feature film or any future novels? Or are you just very much focused on the current projects which you've got, which is, you know, quite a few?
I'm focused on sort of just what I'm doing now. And like my main goal, you know, is to get these films out and win some awards in these, you know, film festivals. And my dream is to get Blood in the Woods, you know, before, you know, Shudder, Amazon Prime, Hulu, and get it developed into a series or, you know, an exclusive for one of the media streaming services. I think it's a good story to tell. I think, you know, the universe is craving that nostalgic feel right now. And I think Blood in the Woods can give them something hella different than what's out right now. So, you know, it's not Summer of 84. It's not Stranger Things. It's not it. It's on a whole new level.
Yeah. That was the other thing. Talking about that kind of nostalgia thing. All of that nostalgia boom currently at the moment is heavily rooted in the 80s. There is definitely a nostalgia throughout Blood in the Woods. Again, it is of a kind of early 90s setting. And you create that kind of setting quite well of, you know, things that were happening at the time. And there's a lot of references to music of the time. It's music a big part of your cultural diet, as you know.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, music is a big part of my life.
And I noticed a lot of references to that kind of early 90s kind of grunge rock. There's like Stone Temple Pilots and Alice in Chains and all that kind of thing. And I take it because it's the characters are based on you and your friends. That was the kind of stuff we were listening to back then.
And I'm still a huge metalhead now. You know, Alice in Chains and Stone Temple Pilots and Bush and Nirvana, all that stuff, you know, sort of laid the foundation. And you know, now you scroll through my phone and you're listening to like Cradle of Filth and, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. So, I mean, the 90s, I think, was the last great decade of music. And I tried to, you know, put it in there as much as I could because it had a very big influence on me, 90s, you know, music. And yeah, a lot of people catch on to that.
Yeah. That's interesting, particularly the cradle of filth thing. Obviously yourself being a Christian, and the Cradle of Filth, they famously got themselves in trouble because of an infamous t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I started getting in the metal, my mother used to always say, she's like, I don't care if you listen to the music, just don't listen to the words. And I think I mean, you don't understand what the fuck they're saying anyway, so I'm
yeah
just,
that's a fair point.
You don't like me because, you know, I'm a drummer. I've been a drummer since for like over 20 years. And, you know, I've been in metal bands, you know, almost all my life, even in the military. When I was stationed in Hawaii, I was in a band called Let Them Pray. You can go on YouTube and you can watch us play. I mean, we opened up for Suicide Silence. They're like one of my favorite bands. So, you know, I got to open up for Hatebreed, Suicide Silence, Within the Ruins, 68. So, you know, I've had a very short stint of, you know, living my dream as a little rock star, you know, at points and times. And so I'm a big metalhead, man, you know, Christian or not. Yeah. You know, I'm not your typical Christian. So I mean, I'm like your most watered down one ever, and that's okay, because I love you and so does Jesus, and I'm still gonna listen to fucking Cradle of Filth.
that's a cool attitude to have, man. That's I'm a metalhead too, and that's that's very, and it's cool. Obviously, you're a metalhead and a horror fan, and you've lived out both those dreams. You know, doing your horror writing. I do want to talk briefly. I know this is slightly off topic, because this is a horror podcast, and we generally like to stick to the horror here. But I did hear you mention it in another interview. One of your other dreams was to be a wrestler, and as a wrestling fan, I just thought ask you about that.
Man, you've had some really good questions today. You're the first person that like caught that. Yeah, I mean, in the late 90s, I did backyard wrestling shows for like 4 years. Like, my goal was to go to Dean Malenko's wrestling school in like 1997, 1998. He had like some program set up down there in like Tampa, Florida, and me and my good friend Ron Allen were going to go down there. And you know, life sort of just threw a curveball, and that curveball was unprotected sex, and I had a baby on the way. And so my dream of being a professional wrestler was over. But you know, if, you know, things were different and that never would have happened, I might have been a WWE superstar. I'm just fucking saying.
Well, you know, it's life can take funny turns, and you know, it led you in this direction, and you got to put out a horror novel and make some films. I suppose that was my brief bit of wrestling fun there. Like I said, this horror podcast will end on a note of horror. What would your future horror ambitions be? You know, if you could do anything movie-wise or novel-wise, and like a kind of five-year plan, what would that be? What would your dream in horror be?
I would love to be one of the, just not one of the, just a very successful horror filmmaker, you know, and writer. You know, we see, you know, Jordan Peele, like, he's up and coming, you know, he's doing great things. I could envision myself doing that, because, I mean, you just don't do it by yourself. It's the people that you surround yourself with. Surround yourself with winners, and, you know, there's nothing that you can't achieve together. And I would love to do that, you know. But you can want in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first. But, you know, I'm going to try my best, and I'm going to do what I have to do. And, you know, I'm going to go as far as I can.
Well, that's a good plan, and I you know, it's not unrealistic. You know, that it could very well happen. It's been really nice chatting to you, Joe. It's been good to have you on the show, and once those films come out, we'd be happy to have you on again.
That'd be great. Thanks for having me so much, and I love you, Scotland.
Scotland thanks you. Indeed, Scotland does. And I'd like to thank Joe once again for coming on this episode of the show, and to you, listener, for tuning in. Also, if this is your first time listening and you enjoyed what you heard, you can listen to all previous episodes of the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever you get good podcasts from. We'd also be delighted if you could rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher, as it really helps spread the word for the show. Plus, don't forget to tune in next time when I shall be chatting to the co-directors of the critically acclaimed Freaks, Adam Stein and Zach Lipofsky. See you then.